Welcome to SelfDiscoveryWisdom.com, formerly known as Self Discovery Media. On these podcasts, you're going to hear people who speak from the heart. They've taken the journey in life. Many things have happened to them, but they've changed it to happening for them. And in their strength, their courage, they've discovered their abilities and their wisdom, and they are now sharing it here with you. Do enjoy each show. We bring it to you with love and knowing that it's going to help you on your journey of life. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome back to another edition for the love of music right here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest today is Kevin Flournoy. We're going to be talking all about his music today, the passion for it, the love of it, the 30 years in the business, everything that he's had to go through, an unstoppable behind-scenes force of music nature since 1994, breakthrough as a producer with Sweet Central Love and Big Mountain's follow-up to their smash Baby I Love Your Way, and the keyboardist Reggae Sun Splash Tour, Kevin Flournoy, has an amazing, dizzyingly prolific all-star resume in jazz, pop, R&B realms over the last 30 decades. God, 3 decades, not 30. We're not that old. No. There are times we may feel it, right? So he says, driven by the expanse and the panoramic perspective on music, and starting with his subsequent 90s work of The Emotions and Teen Marie and Ronnie Laws, and hemming in with the saxophonist Blue Note tribute to The Harvest of the World, portrait of the Isle Brothers. Kevin has written and performed or recorded with Chaka Khan, Babyface, Dionne Warwick, Gladys Knight, Jeffrey Osborne, the Pointer Sisters, Jennifer Hudson, Howard Hewitt, Jamie Foxx, the Jazz Crusaders, and contemporary jazz greats Bonnie James, Norma Brown, Kirk Whelan, and Harvey Mason. And in the 2000s, Flournoy toured with Donny Osmond for 6 years. So, you know, we're talking about somebody here that is the music. He doesn't play it. He is the music. And for to be in the business for that long and being able to play with such other great musicians along the line, not only do you have to be good at your job and flexible, adaptable, but it's got to be the very core of you, hasn't it? You can't play that kind of music for this length of time if you are not the music. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Yes, that's good to be here. And that is absolutely correct. You got to have a fiery passion for it. Mm-hmm. And you discover that when you're young, usually. And to where when you wake up, that's all you think about, mm-hmm. is making music. Now, to have longevity in the career, you know, over decades, you do have to be trained correctly. So the best way to do that is to have, you know, your elders tell you how to approach your instrument, how to approach your music as a business, so you'll be in business 30 years later. And so I got the correct training when I was very young about it. There was whispering nuggets of knowledge in my ears, and I didn't understand everything at the time, but you know, 30 years later, I said, thank goodness they told me what they told me.
And you paid attention.
Yes. Yeah, yes. I heard everything. Yeah. But I can see it, you know, after years, I said, oh, I see why they said that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the thing, is that when you're young, you know, I feel the music, I'm exploring the music, and you don't always listen to people because it is, you know, like, no, man, I'm just, you know, I'm exploring. But to actually pay attention so that you can be in the business for as long as you are, you know, that is a big one, because quite honestly, you know, it's a tough business to be in. It's a real tough business to be in. You've got to be thick-skinned, but at the same time, open enough that, you know, your heart and soul can express itself. You know, you're only as good as your next gig.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And you know, there's always the flavor of the month, you know, that goes on. So to have that consistency and that longevity, you've also got to be very true to yourself, don't you?
Yes, yes. You've got to pay attention to what's real. So there's a lot, especially, you know, I'm in Hollywood. So there's a lot of things that look real that aren't, but some things that look like they're being successful, but they're not going to be around later. And so you have to decide whether, do I want that and want to be around for a year or 30 years?
Yes.
And if you want the 30-year version, there's a few things that you have to take care of in terms of your knowledge, your understanding of your in my case, understanding the instrument. Like one little thing is like learning how to read music when I was young. It's a major difference. Playing naturally is something that I would do, and I have people around me who have played naturally, but knowing how to read music at an early age has gotten me way more work over time and way more interesting work, playing with orchestras and traveling the world with different people, being able to write. And so that's added an extra layer of success on that end. And so yeah, there's a few things like when I talk to young people, I bring young people in to produce music for them. And I can certain ones listen. Some are in the moment and they don't really hear or understand what I'm saying, but I'm trying to pass on some knowledge. But I've seen over time, like I might make suggestions. Well, you should do this based on my experience, and they might go another direction. I'm feeling this over here. And then I watch after a year to where it's just not successful. And they just fade. There's so many artists out there now. The competition is stiff. And social media, it's rough. So it's even more imperative that you take some time out to kind of listen to those who have been through it.
And a lot of the young people, but I've got TikTok and I've got YouTube and I've got all that. Yeah, that's all wonderful. That's a form of marketing. But there is a certain amount of integrity, consistency. You're building your roots. Right, you want to build those roots deep. You want your tree trunk strong, and so your branches can be flexible and blow in any gale, right? But you've got to build those roots. And if you are constantly kind of just living in the high or the frittering from one to the other, where's the root building? Because without those roots, you're just going to get blown off the scene.
Yeah, I was watching some special where Sting was making a statement, and he said a lot of the young people skip steps. And when you skip steps, it'll become an issue later on. And when you said about the roots, when I first moved to Los Angeles to get into the business more seriously, it took 5 years of planting seeds. I call it planting seeds. And then I started seeing it grow to where I can make the certain type of money, take care of myself, but it took years. And then, but once it started happening, the phone is ringing like constantly. But it's from planting the seeds over years. So there's never, once it started, there was never any time off. There's never where the phone's not ringing. But if you
It's a
don't
nice
do,
problem to have, but you've got to, but you've got to do all that work in order to have that problem,
Yeah,
right?
I got to the point where I said, yeah, on the weekends, people would call and say, can you do this on Friday and Saturday, perform? Or and I got to the point where, I have choices. I can do one of five different things. And so I can negotiate better. But in the planting seed version, for 5 years, you just kind of go for it. And when I talk to successful people, they always say there's a number of years that they just did everything. You're just doing it. You're not being picky, or you're not paying me enough. No, you're getting experience. But then there's a time that where that comes, the you're past that point, and now people are looking for you. But a lot of people skip over that point where they're planting those seeds and we call it paying dues.
I've interviewed many a person, musician that has been in the business for a long time, Gerald Albright, saxophonist. I call it a saxophonist. It's just, oh, music is from there. It's fantastic. Joe Coleman from the Planters, I've had him on a couple of times. Gino, that's been in the business for a long time, and a few others. And it's like, and everybody has, Joe was saying, I said, what time did technology get, become an obstacle? And because he was saying disco time, which was before your time. But when disco came along, people were stopping to have, real performers on because they could just play the record and play a DJ cheaper. And so he said he had to go overseas where they people wanted live performers and wait until that era kind of came to an end where he could come back. So, you do have to kind of sometimes and go, okay, this isn't, this isn't a trajectory going up here right now. Something else has got in the way. Either I've got to adapt or adopt or, be willing to go somewhere else at this time to play my music. So that flexibility must be there, right?
Also, when I started on the production is my main thing, composing, writing. And when I started, I used to take meetings in Hollywood where you go in, you play your song. So these record companies, they love me to come in because I always had something good for them to listen to. And so, but when I started that process, I was trained to with live music and real singing, and we didn't have all the tricks that they have now when you record it. You actually really needed to sing, be able to sing the song through and in pitch, and and musicians play it right. We might take a couple takes, but it was a different game then. But when I started to have these meetings, music was changing. Rap music was becoming stronger and stronger at the time. And so sometimes at the meetings, I would play songs and they would suggest, yeah, go back and put a drum machine on it now, or go back and change the lyrics so it's more street. I would get those comments like that. So this decision, do I change my whole thing or do I stay where I'm at? And the money was going, the money was there. If you changed up, it's a fad. So it's an individual decision. I started to stay true to the music that I knew and create the music, and those who like that will come to you.
Precisely, that you're building a reputation. I've been doing this nearly 12 years now, and it's literally a reputation of one show at a time. And that's, your one song at a time, one gig at a time. And the best form of praise or recognition is when people refer. Have you heard? Or you need to listen to this person, because you can go in and promote yourself up to the yin yang and back, but when somebody does a referral, it has so much more, substance to it.
We think of the music business as what kind of, we have all the numbers and likes and all that, but what is your impact is the question. It could be a song that didn't is not even on the radio, but it's having a serious impact in the music industry. For reasons of that, where people are referring you. And there's other things to look at when it comes to, like these days, than how many people like or are pushing a button on your social media.
And we've got to a stage where everything is, if you haven't got somebody's attention in 2 seconds, they're gone. And for me, I haven't got the patience for your 2 seconds. If you're not willing to listen to depth and contact and real nuggets, you're not ready for them, right? And that's the thing, is like we've become too kind of titillating, and kind of catering to the short attention span and become shallow. And really, what our heart and soul is craving is depth.
It definitely, and I see that, because I'm out a lot and I see musicians or bands presenting the quick thing and it works and they're making money on it. But the depth of it, like I said, the longevity is different. And when you're sitting in the audience and listening to depth, it's you're gonna want to pay that ticket price for years to come.
Oh,
And there's depth
exactly.
involved.
You'll pay the 300 or 400, or like with Taylor Swift here, like 3,000 for a ticket or something ridiculous, right? Because
But
you're
it's
going
got to
for
be
an
something there.
experience. Yeah, exactly. Back in the day, we used to call it bubblegum music. So it was kind of upbeat, kind of good dancing type music, sing along, but it didn't have any depth. It didn't kind of introduce a third or fourth chord to it. So,
Good for
and
the
so.
moment.
It was good for the moment and on to the next. But what we, I think, society really loves today is being able to listen to some music. Very often when I'm working, I'm doing kind of mundane stuff, the admin stuff. I like my headphones on and I'm listening to some music, and it's like it's feeding me while my automation of everything else I need to do is doing, right? So, and it's you the music that kind of feeds you at the core of you. It's not just the words and the lyrics that kind of, yes, I resonate with that, but it's that music that kind of gets on down. It gets into the heart and soul. You feel the elongation of it, everything about it. You feel every note of that music, and it's so healing and so supportive and just so, kind of immersing that I think we become different because of the music.
Interesting you mentioned that. So I started doing shows since my last release, and I have a couple songs that they're not out yet, but I performed them, right? And so one of the goals as a producer and songwriter is to be able to extract some emotion out of the person you're playing for. And so the secret is, how do you do that when you're writing? If you just lay your hands down and write a few chords, or the lyrics have to do it. If there's lyrics involved, the way you play the saxophone, the way you play the piano, the way the chords go together, it's very deep. And then once you put it all together, and I have a song called Tears Are Gone that I do. It's a piano instrumental. And after the first time I performed it, somebody out of the audience came up to me and said, it almost made him cry just listening to it. And then my thing is, okay, so I did it right. You know, I
Yes.
put it
Yes.
together right. But it's not easy. It's
No.
not easy. And
No.
so since the computer age, there's a lot of people in the business now who just understand don't understand that concept, because that comes from years of playing organically, how to make that work.
Magic word, organically.
Yes.
I mean, there's nothing more disappointing than listening to someone live and go, "Who are you?" You know,
Yeah.
they don't sound like their record. You know,
Right.
they're because they're being so synthesized and leveled up, and then when they actually do get out there in front of you, and you go, "Huh?"
Yeah,
And it's
that
like, yeah, it does
happens
happen a lot. You know, I'm a big fan of kind of the music competitions like The Voice of America's Idol, etc., because I love to see those people evolve. But you can have somebody that's technically really good, but then the
lot.
person that comes in with either the crack voice or speaking, you know, singing from the heart and soul, and maybe get a bit pitchy, but my God, did they hit you,
Yes.
right? And then it's like, those are the ones. Those are the ones. Yeah.
Yeah, because it was about the performance in the 60s and 70s where they would just sing the song all the way through, whether it was the Isley Brothers
Yes,
or
yes.
whoever. You might hear a little something that cracks and pitchy. It could be the Beatles too, you know,
Yes.
old recordings and the guitar scratchy and stuff, but it's the humanistic part of it
Yes.
that's
Yeah.
reaching out and grabbing your heart that makes the song. Because I listen to songs sometimes, somebody asked me to play an old Beatles song, so I might listen to it. And as a producer, I said, oh, I hear all kind of crazy stuff going on in the song
Yeah.
that I don't notice because I'm listening critically at the
Right.
time. And it didn't matter. It didn't
No.
matter because it's millions and millions sold. And so it's an interesting concept to point people in that direction and say, you got to reach people with what you're doing
Yeah, we
some way
don't
or
want
another.
things perfect, perfect. We want things real.
Real, yeah.
Real. Keep it real. You know, I want to
Real, yeah.
connect with it. I want that song to be saying something to me. I want that music to move me.
Yeah.
Right, I want to feel it. I don't care if it's perfect, all right,
Right.
but I just want to
Exactly.
feel it. And this is what I do love about those shows is that they are up there singing, and this is their performance, and there is no cutting, all right, that it's live
Hopefully,
in
yeah.
that moment. And it's like, especially when you see them where they kind of surrendered to the process, and they
Yeah.
realize why they're there, and then they immerse themselves
They
in
immerse,
it.
they go to the next
Ah,
level. It's
boy.
interesting you brought that up. So I played keyboards on the first season of American Idol, right? And halfway through the season, the American Idol, they decided they were going to use, I was doing pre-recorded music before then, wasn't a live band on the show. And then toward the end, they assembled a live band, which I was playing in. One of the rehearsals for the big finale that they did in Las Vegas, they would bring the young people in. It was rehearsal, bring the young people in to sing their song with the live band. Some of them, it was the very first time they've ever done that,
Right.
which is
Yes.
interesting because we come from a background where we're in a garage and we're playing every day, every day live, but not that generation. And
Right.
so some would come in and they were, quite a few were very scared before they even started playing, and then they would get confused. It was a process. And I remember watching it at the time and was wondering, what's wrong? What's going on? You know, why are you we do this all the time, right? No, they don't do this all the
No,
time. Never done it. It was an interesting thing to watch on the first season
right.
that it was
Was
new.
General, I know Gerald Albright was 6 seasons on that. Was he on the same season as you?
No, I was on the season where Kelly Clarkson won.
Right.
She
I
was the
mean, you know, what
winner.
a voice. I mean, you know,
And
and
so no, it was kind of just there was calls. I got a call from the bass player. It was a kind of just musicians. It wasn't
right.
a deal then. It wasn't
Yeah.
about the music. It became a more of a big production with who was in the band later on.
Yes.
And then they had Gerald Albright and the rest of them. But
Right.
I was there where we just, you know, I got the call. Okay, I'll do the show, you know, whatever. You know, it
Exactly.
ended up being a major thing. Yeah.
Yes,
But to
yes.
watch that process where, and I like the fact that like American Idol, they were singing, it wasn't just pop songs they were singing, they were actually singing real songs on
Yes.
there. And so it was probably beneficial for them to have that experience as a young person to get in front of a band and actually do that. And
Yeah.
I like that part of it.
I think, you know, whether they won or how far they got, I mean, what a fantastic tutorial. Right, of immersing themselves in the experience, even in the process of, coming up singing a cappella or thrown on the stage and competing with other people in a group. All of that was, you may be good, but if you don't have the resilience and the tenacity, you're not going to make it. Right. And you see good people fall by the wayside because of all the other stuff. The singing is a certain percentage of it. There's all the other stuff that you've got to navigate well as well. And if you don't, it can chew you up.
Yes, there's a lot of other stuff. It's like,
Yes.
and there's a lot, especially in my case where you're a band director and musical director, and you have your own music, and you have to assemble live musicians. I have a show called the K-Flow Show where it involves 15, 20 people.
Yeah.
And so I'm at the helm of that. And at the beginning, when you first started, you don't have necessarily have the team yet. And so you're developing the team, so you're wearing a lot of hats.
Yes.
And every individual has issue. That's 20 different issues that you're that it had nothing to do with playing the music. You know,
Right.
it's all kind of
Yes.
other stuff. So people don't see that, and they come to the show and they're clapping and oh, this is great. And but it's a journey. It's not for everybody.
I'm a producer of books. I've got an anthology coming out, and there's 15 of us in this book. And it's like, yes, I know what you mean. It's all wonderful people, but just trying to get people in sync with each other and get the right material and all of that. And it's like everybody's got lives going on, and you're trying to pull things in. And so yeah, you've got to deal with all of that. And but I will say that the analogy I use for life is that it's for us to discover what our instrument is. Learn how to play it well so we can be a soloist, but join an orchestra in our strength where we can harmoniously play together to transcend out from there.
That's exactly what it is on a music platform. Knowing how to be in the ensemble is as important as being out front. So
Yes.
when I get a call to be just be in the group, I might have knowledge to of what the leader's doing, but I know how to just sit in the cut and the back and what do you want me to do?
Yes.
And some are that's a difficult thing, a challenge for them when they're leaders and they can't sit in the ensemble, or they want to shine. Either they're playing being too busy musically, or they're being too busy with demands placed on the situation. There's a lot of noise that can happen.
Yeah.
And so it's good to learn how to be in front and the back is what I was trained early on.
Right. I mean, I'm sure that if you look at the band in The Voice, which are sensational. I mean, the genres that they have to play, and two or three rehearsals, and they're out there, and those people only sound as good as the band makes them sound, and it's like it is. Yes, I'm sure they have particular genres and styles that they prefer, but they're going across the board, and you can tell. You can tell when it's hit their chord, so to speak. You can see the immersement in it. But that is part of that flexibility as a musician. And yes, you need to stand true to who you are and what your music style is, but you've also got to be flexible, don't you, to kind of what others want from you.
Flexibility is everything. There's jazz musicians, especially when fusion started happening. Fusion and then now like a smooth music. And so a jazz musician is very adept at running up and down their instruments and playing all kind of scales, and which is great because that's how we learn. But a lot of the music that's commercial out there in jazz doesn't require all that on stage or on the record. And so this is a different time. So when I work with some artists, they'll say, yeah, we want to hire you because you're going to play the music that I have here, as opposed to showcasing yourself and how well you play jazz inappropriately on the gig. And it's a major thing. And I was told that when I was young to how to let the music, especially playing behind a vocalist, it's about time and space,
Yes,
about what
not
you're playing.
outshining.
Not outshine or running over them.
Right,
Don't run over them while
yes.
they're playing. And a lot of that happens and you lose the job.
Yeah, because you've lost, the performer has lost their voice, and it completely shatters everybody in the concentration of what they're listening to. So yes, and the thing about jazz, I mean, blues jazz is my favorite. It's that. I absolutely love it, but I love it because of its freedom, because it is something that I think as a blues player or jazz player is it is very much about being in tuned with who they are and letting the chords take them where they need to go,
Yeah.
exaggerating certain chords. And of course, that really appeals to me because I'm very much an in-flow person. But I can understand that you can't be that organic if you are supporting someone else, unless they're in tune, you're so in tuned with each other that, they start doing something and you can match them. But you've
Right.
really got to have a good synergy for that, don't you?
That would happen over time. I can tell you when you get a gig like 2022, I toured mostly with Chaka Khan that year. Road. And when you, the, we got a week's worth of rehearsal. When you come into rehearsal, you need to play those songs like she used to hearing them, not like you want them to be heard.
It's not about
Okay.
you.
Then it's a problem.
Yes.
It's a problem then. So I you
And you've got to
basically.
come with your energy if it's Shaka.
You have ideas about how to, you can, and the trick is you can add a little extra flair on there, but you got to be careful about what you do. It takes time to figure out how to go outside and add some energy to the music without adding too much to the music. It takes time to figure that out. I play with a lot of artists, so I figured it out. I have a method.
You
And
have
usually what
really
I
played
do,
with a lot of artists.
yeah, what I usually do when they first meet me on the first rehearsal, so I have a tape they call a board tape of a concert they did or who was playing the last time. I stick close to the script on the first when I first start. Then I can start adding stuff over time. So when I on the first rehearsals when they sing, they're singing on top of something that they're used to hearing, not a whole new take on the song. Something that you so then they feel comfortable with it, and then I got the gig. Now over time, I can start adding stuff to it, and if I go too far, it'll be okay to say, okay, you went too far on that one. But yeah, so I have a method to so I can at least keep the account live.
Now, you have played with so many people and really crossed many different types of styles and genres, and whether you've been their backup one or whether you've been a forward singer, is there a particular style that really is your groove altogether?
I have a style of music that I enjoy playing, but I haven't, it's an older style, so it's not really relevant as much in terms of what I do on a daily basis. I came up when I was 15, I got a scholarship to a college called UCSD in La Jolla in San Diego. And the professors that brought me in introduced me to Count Basie. Took me to a concert and I talked to him backstage. I was 15, he was 80 something. And I fell in love with that music. Swing. I played in the swing big band, which was my favorite thing for 6 years, and that's all I played. I did not, at the time, Anita Baker, Whitney Houston were doing a thing. I did. It wasn't my focus. I was playing that kind of jazz swing music, and that's something that I enjoy doing. But that's not, but if you look at my list, it's not a list of swing bands
No,
that I
no.
played.
Well, we
But
need to
that,
bring them back.
yeah,
We do some
that's what I
little.
love, though. That's what I love. I think I skipped it. The hardest type of presentation in pop was like the Dionne Warwick and Donny Osmond because it involved orchestras and it's very meticulous. It's not like you can free flow with anything. The music's written out, the shows are very detailed. And so you got to be
Fine,
there.
fine oiled machine.
Yeah, fine. And it's difficult. It's difficult. Donny Osmond had released a record, Broadway remakes when I first started in early 2000s, and from a producer out of New York. And those songs, it's like songs from the Broadway show Rent, and just they're different songs that we did arrangements of those. And it was kind of the hardest thing ever, because and sometimes in the development of that show. They weren't all some of the scripts weren't all the way written out, so we would have to read some of the orchestral stuff, the keyboard players, and pick them out of the thing. It was just difficult. It was a I had a headache every day. And but those are spectacular shows though, in terms of the production. And I love doing that.
Did you see the Elvis Presley movie, the recent one a couple of years ago?
Oh, when that came out, I was doing something, and I have not seen it yet.
Oh my
Yeah,
God, you've got to
it's on my
see it.
list. I know they tell you. Yeah, I've
No,
heard
you've got to
everything.
see it. And there is one scene there where Elvis is just, getting his musicians together with him, and he would just kind of hum a few beats and then ask them to do something. And then the other one, nothing written down, nothing given to them, just him, like, doing his thing. And then, now I want you to do this, and you do that, and you do this. And you can see how all those beautiful pieces are coming together. They're all in his head. All right, but he's bringing it all out one by one, and then everybody's kind of like connecting, and it's a beautiful scene. It's a really good movie, but so definitely do yourself a favor and see that, because I wasn't a huge Elvis fan. I was from England. I was into Cliff Richard when I was little, and obviously the Beatles and things, because I was in England, right? So, but I do definitely respect his journey. It was a tough journey, but also, I mean, the entire kind of opening scene of the influence of his music, which was kind of the black church music of, of guttural music, rhythmic music that just took you over, and that I connect to in a very, very big way. And that was his influence through his life. And so what would you, I mean, obviously Count Basie was that influence, that swing music for you. That is kind of, if you had a choice right now, put out whatever you want, all the backing, what would it be that your heart and soul wants? Not your capability, but what your heart and soul wants to do.
Interesting enough, over my whole career, my focus of something that I really enjoy doing when it comes to production writing is pop music. Like and that would mean, of course, that means different things, depends on what the time period you're in. So when I was doing American Idol, they had like pop music was like Paul Abdul and Christina Aguilera. That I'm very I love it. It's a challenge. I do a hybrid thing to where it's the organic that meets the computer. I have degrees in computer, technology, and so I understand them very well. And I use a hybrid of techniques using the computer but keeping it an organic, using live musicians and both together. So a project that I would do to say go for it, it would be down that realm.
What is it about it that gets you going?
I think it's challenging to my mind, writing process. I think it's something to do about the challenge of it. It's like when I think about the Count Basie thing, I'm just drawn to how the music feels. And the challenge with the pop music is the challenge of how to put it together to be, to in my mind, how to make this a top 10 hit. That's the
How to
challenge.
get people moving,
Yes.
both
With
inside and
rhythm.
out, right?
And how because basically all the elements have to work together a certain way, which is the rhythmic part, the bass part, the guitar part. A lot, if I read stories about how records are made with this Bob Marley when they came up, Coldplay. And when you read the stories, they don't just go in the studio and it happens. They play. When you just play, you're not there yet. There's other stuff that has to happen. So I studied what that other stuff was in Bob Marley's case, where he combined with the producers to add some pop elements to his thing, and his music is forever. Coldplay the certain same way. It's hard when you first go in and play. That's how I record here in Hollywood. I have the guys come in and play, but that's just step one,
You're
because you
right.
have a certain type of recording coming back that's not necessarily pop. So I start adding or I keep the organic elements and start adding the other elements in the way that I've read that other producers have done in the past. The Beatles the same way. They did the same thing. And so I'm fascinated by that. That's a challenge for me, and I love doing that.
Did you like the Doors and the Beach Boys and all of those type of musics?
And that's kind of an interesting thing, because back then I studied all of that. It would seem like we would just listen to music, period. Whether it's Elton John, it didn't matter, Commodores. And so I heard it all, which I incorporate into my style now. And I'm not sure. Sometimes when I come in contact with young people and it's a job and they don't know who certain people are, that just like they don't, because they listen to one or two forms of music and that's it. But I think that's debilitating to their career in the future. And so my thing, I used to listen to everything.
And you can see that with a particular singer that come in these competitions with one style, and then a good coach would say, you know, there's something in your voice. I want you to try this. And it's completely out of their realm of what they've done
Yes.
before. And then suddenly you see, ah, a star is born. You know, this is
Yes.
where you're meant to be. And like you see them kind of transform and able to take on other different styles and not limit themselves. And I mean, that's wonderful, you know, for people. They're always true to the core of who they are or their certain signature of who they are, but being able to branch out and kind of incorporate other styles. And you can just see those wings start to fly, you know?
Yeah, and that's good to see, and a good point. It's a little bit more difficult. Like in those days, you might be signed to a record company, and they will stretch you out, you know, like in that
Yes.
form, and you're kind of contemplating. I'm not comfortable there,
Yeah.
but being uncomfortable is part of the process of
Yes.
learning.
That's how you grow.
Oh,
That's how you grow,
and
folks. Willing to explore.
And so as an independent with the young ones, I see that it's a harder process because it's not like a big record deal involved. And even though I'm saying, yeah, come over and sing this, and they're listening to what I'm saying, because I can hear that they need to stretch in that direction. But a lot of them just won't go, because the answer is that's not me. Yeah, I know you
How
think
do you know
that,
what's you until you explore?
it's
Come on. Don't
not
get
me. Yeah,
stuck in one
let's
groove.
explore. And
Yeah.
then occasionally I get somebody who will sing everything. They'll say, whatever
Exactly.
you got. And
Yeah.
then I said, that person's going to be good in the future.
Yeah, because they are that flexible. And through that they find, as I said, their signature core. And it
Yes.
doesn't matter then what they sing or what genre, the core of who they are is always there.
Yeah.
You know,
There's,
like you, Jennifer Hudson, I'm sure, you know, what was it like playing with her?
Yeah. So that was, I tell people, so I played it was a special party on the Sony lot in Culver City out here, and we did about six songs. So I'm on the piano and the keyboards. Jennifer's called to entertain, and so she brought her background singers, and then I was with the band. And I said one of the most interesting thing is that they put the monitors up to me so I can hear her voice when I'm playing, right? And so I'm listening to her sing, and I was thinking, dang, she sounded. She did a song called Hallelujah. She did that one and a couple other ones. And just how clean and perfect it was incredible. Because you don't necessarily hear that these days. Now I've
Yes.
heard it because I work with Gladys Knight,
Oh, I
and
love her. She's one of
you
my
hear those kind
favorites.
of vocals with her
Yeah.
too. You know her where it's just perfect. You know coming out of and Jennifer's younger, right? And it was just kind of an amazing thing to hear that because it's inspirational to what I'm playing, and the back and forth was like incredible. And so
Yes.
I love that experience. But I had played with a lot of the iconic vocals, even like with Chaka Khan. When you when I'm playing, and they put the vocals in the monitors during the show, and it's like, wow, this is incredible. I had some of my friends say that about who played with Michael Jackson, to
Yeah.
where they're on stage and they playing bass behind them, and their mind's like, this is like incredible while they're playing.
Yeah,
You know,
exactly.
it's
You
just like
become the
a
fan while you're playing
yeah,
with them.
it's a moment. It's a
Yeah.
moment.
I mean, you know, Gladys is from my era and you know, I mean, just, you know, Midnight Train to Georgia, Memories, all of that. She's always been one of my favorites. But you know, again, because for me she's got that undercurrent, you know, that just that something that's there. But you know,
I was gonna say with Gladys too, with Gladys, because I did the show in Gladys when she first did. Well, she did a show at the Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas, and so there was a few weeks of getting that show together, and so there was a place, I think it was one of her homes, and we were kind of set up in the living room rehearsing, and she would come downstairs and kind of sit next to me and sing at half voice, like just not all the way out, and she'd be in a little, you know, the one just sitting down singing. And the half voice is like incredible. She's not even trying.
No. You know, I
Yeah.
mean, you know, I've watched many of the biographies. Of course, you know, Jennifer Hudson played Aretha Franklin, and there was Bessie, done by Queen Latifah, and oh gosh, I can see the name right there. It's going to come to me in a moment. I'm so guttural. I mean, these are the people that kind of grew up in the 30s and the 40s, and Andrea Day played her, and I just can't remember the artist's name.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, when it comes to you, shout it
Yeah.
out. But I mean, she played, I mean, it was a guttural movie, played very, very raw, and Andrea Day did a most incredible job of it. But you look at what each one of them had to go through as a woman and as a woman of color. And the abuse that they went through, but it was no matter what, the music was always true and always always never left them. It was always their forefront that carried them through and everything. And you know, there's that kind of dedication to music is always something that I admire so much, because it's when we find out what our core purpose is in life and we step into that purpose, being able to continue that purpose no matter what, in whichever way it takes us, but still be purposeful, I think is one of the greatest gifts we can give ourselves. And so to be a musician or a performer where you can still keep playing that purpose of your music and see it kind of, you know, grow and pulsate out in so many different arenas with so many different people. I mean, you've got quite a catalogue of people there that you've played with, a catalogue of people that you are producing. You know, that satisfaction of knowing where your purpose has taken you, because you didn't dictate it's going that way. You allowed the experience of it. And so, what has that meant to you along the way?
Yeah, so I'm currently experiencing the part where I'm putting stuff out under my name as a soloist. And so I'm seeing the reaction, and I'm able to actually read the reaction. You put stuff on YouTube and a thousand people respond and tell you exactly what they how
What they
you're
think.
moving them. And this and I've studied that. I'm studying what they're saying. And I was like, oh, you know, they're speaking to like it moves me. I listen to it every morning because it makes me feel a certain way. And I think, you know, I've studied how to do that since I've been young, but to see that it actually works is an amazing thing for me right now. So I'm smiling a lot these days
So
about
just
that.
like, you know, you've got a background singer that suddenly comes to the forefront, right? They're the ones that are holding the mic now, so to speak. This is your time. Of all the experience that you've had, all that you've accomplished, it's now your time to step up there and take all the expertise and all the experiences that you have, and you know, and put it into your truth and share it out there.
Yes, exactly what I'm doing, the process. And when I tell people about I've just released a few songs, but I have, you know, I have a whole lot of songs already recorded. And but the process of putting them out is strategic, you know, how you put things out. So I'll probably have a full record out, you know, this quarter. But it's about the music is about the relationships that I developed over these past years. Like the most recent song is Ronnie Laws is on it, but that's where I got my start when I was younger playing keyboard. So the roles in the studio have reversed, and now I'm telling him, you know, I have him come to the studio and say, "Would you do this for me?" And that's the relationship I have, you know, I'm having with most of the artists I play with. Phil Perry's the same way, to where I used to play keyboards for him back when I was younger.
A
And
nice
so,
circle.
yeah, so this presentation of my music is I'm going back and grabbing some of the iconic singers that I worked with, and I'm talking to all of them, you know, and it's nice because the spirit is that yeah, we'll come work for you because you did a good job for us, and we'll come and do a little something with you, and that's put me in a good place right now in terms of making a presentation because I can present my music just myself, but having some of those iconic people do duets with me puts them in another space because their name is associated with it. But it's not just I called somebody, it's somebody I ha actually have a real relationship with over time.
And the most very, very satisfactory to know that they'll be there for you.
Yes.
I interviewed a guy with the ballad drummer, and he always wanted to his drums to be more on the ballad. And of course, growing up, you say, "Are you crazy?" You know. And so, you know, over the 25 years, and he was on, I think, America's Got Talent somewhere along
Got
the
talent,
line as well. And but you know, over that 25 years, he gathered the people. When he said, "I want to put this album together," people were there. Right,
Yes.
and it's a very jazzy, very bluesy, very sultry, you know, kind of ballad type music that is great to listen to. And he said it was so satisfactory that over the 25 years in the business, of the people that said, "Yes, I will be there," you know,
Yes.
the friends that you've made, you cannot make them overnight. These are
No.
friends that have traveled with you, and
Yes,
that you know each other, and you're there, you understand each other, and you're there to support each other, because you are a musical family, a village.
Exactly. And I'm kind of glad you said that because I want to mention about the musician thing. So the musicians that are coming in to record with me in the studio are the top musicians on a lot of the records that you listen to. And so you might not know them by name, But there now, that's very, very, it's inspirational to me when because they're coming to play. I've been on the road with them, but they're coming to play on my music and adding so much qualitative, harmonious sounds to what I'm
Yes.
doing. That is just it makes me smile again too. It makes me excited.
Yeah.
So like one of the bass player for Chaka Khan, who's the musical director, is playing on a few tunes of mine. And I can go down the guy who played on Michael Jackson's Last. This is it. He's playing on a couple, you know. So
Yeah.
these people are in a studio with me, and that experience is, I think, it's everything to me because it's a
Yeah.
culmination of my whole process from when I first started playing. That these people who play with the top people are there in the room working with me.
And the thing is, it's not about ego, right?
No,
It's about the
no.
music, and you know you can trust them because you know who they are, how they play, and it's just a question of who's good for which song, where. And you know that basically is just a little direction and set them free, and they've got your back. They're there for you. And that kind of trust of knowingness, of knowing each other as musicians is it must be extremely comforting because you are being able to just be yourself and do what you're wanting to do on the album because you know they've got you.
They're bringing their expertise from their experience, but they receive direction. Like I say, it's only a small amount of direction. I have to, let's go this way, and then we start playing, and things start happening because they're experienced at doing what we're doing, and they've worked with all the top artists, and that's a major thing that sometimes I can't express that to people what's happening in the studio. It's not that I called a bunch of people. You might see the picture of a bunch of people. A lot more going on behind what you see. And you see
30
in a
years of
plane.
accumulation.
Yes.
Exactly.
It takes years to accumulate, like you said, those relationships. Years.
And
I've
within
had
a
I've had situations where I produce a session and I'll have 7 or 8 musicians in, and maybe the artist who doesn't really understand what's going on in the room will call those same people and say, "Well, that session was amazing." And of course, I'm not involved in it because I was producing it, and call those same people, go back into the same studio, and the magic's not there, and wonder what happened. Because there's more, there's relationships, and being a producer is a special thing too. Being able to guide people without stomping on what they do is a special gift. And so allowing people, you got to make the right call and allow them to be themselves at the studio and just guide a little. And that's an art form too. And so if you're a singer and you're just going to put people together, go in the studio and think magic's going to happen, a lot of times it's not going to go the way you think it's going to
You
go.
know, every magician has had many failures before they have a success. And that's the same with musicians as well. It's like in anything that you do, there's going to be a lot of, falls and trip overs before you kind of get it right. But, when you got a bunch of people and not only got it right, but they're in harmony with each other because they've learned the lessons along the way. They know how to apply now. And that's really great.
And I don't, it doesn't always work with what I'm doing, and I have experience. So you can imagine if you don't have any experience, how hard of a challenge that's going to be. But sometimes I have an idea and we'll start it off, and I'll have to switch it out because it's not exactly what I thought I was going to hear. And these are the best musicians. It's just about creativity, and you got to be, be able to create something else on the spot.
And the because of the experience you can.
You're not stuck.
You're
You're
not
not stuck
stuck.
yet.
Okay, that's not working. How about we try da 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 da? And everybody,
That's
okay.
what it's.
Right? Because they've got the experience, right? It's not like, what are you talking about? No, you've got the experience. They know how to pivot. And that's the beauty of it. They're with you and they're there for you.
Yes, I love it. Yeah, and that's what I've been experienced. I did a lot of recording over the last 2 or 3 years, and as a lot of sessions in some of the top studios on Sunset. There's Westlake, Sunset Recording, East West, all where they make all the major hits at. And we're having those experiences there. And sometimes certain engineers, because we got to a point where music of the bands weren't playing all at the same time in the same room anymore much. And so I would always do that. And so some of the engineers would like to request to come even just to see it go down, the younger ones. See, oh, you're playing all at the same time? I have 7 people playing in different rooms and doing and the violin players and the whole bit. And so it's And I didn't know that it was a special thing because that's how I grew up, you know.
Right, exactly.
At the time period, the last few years, it is a special thing to be able to do that. I'm glad I have that particular skill and that I know the people who specialize in that kind of recording. And so it's that's a joy for me. I love
Yeah.
doing it.
Yeah. And there's something about that synergy, isn't it? Like with the whole band there, everybody together. It's an experience that you're all sharing, not just compartmentalizing. And then you hear it when it gets put together. But it's an experience that you're going through in real time.
Yes, and the real time thing is something that you can't, it's not going to happen in programming.
Right.
The human element is gone. And part of the thing that is hard to present to people to understand is that when we're playing, say there's four of us playing in a studio, we're communicating through our instruments. There's a language going on.
Yes.
Certain things will happen all at the same time with everybody, and nobody said a word.
Right.
And we decided to do something that, because of our experience, and we're
You
doing it's not written on the sheet.
right.
And we laugh about it later and say, yeah,
Yes.
everybody went to the same place.
Yes.
Nobody said a word. It's a
Yeah.
language.
Yes. And isn't it great because everybody trusts each other that one can do that without the others going, "Hey, it's not on the page," but instead, "Oh, where are you going? How can I
Yeah.
follow?" Right? And it's more of an
Yes.
excitement and a
Yes.
creative excitement going on because you can trust each other with each other's creativity, and that's, you're allowing everybody else to quote have their voice as well.
Yes, exactly. Even on the vocal, like I have, Ronnie Laws in this last tune, the first single, Tell Me If You Still Care, is Phil Perry singing. That experience of watching him in the studio, they record, they learned how to record, like sing a whole song down from the beginning to the end. And then maybe like in Ronnie's case, the first time you play a solo through, you're like, okay, we're done. It's 10 minutes into the session. We're kind of done, right? Because he's recorded so many records. And then we kind of laugh and he says, that's it. I said, well, let's just do another one just because,
Yes,
because
just for fun.
yeah, just because you can't be done in 10 minutes.
Right, exactly.
You got to put a
Unheard
little
of.
work into it. Yeah. And
Yeah.
it's just amazing. And like Phil Perry would come up, there's a vocal harmony thing that he came up with at the end of the song, which I, he said, we're going to do this. And he's on a microphone recording. And then he puts it together. And it's just amazing to watch the process, the creative process of somebody who's recorded, for 4 decades.
Yes, yes,
And
yes.
coming from that time where you had to be able to sing all the way through,
Exactly.
which
And I
means
think.
you had to perform. It's a performance. There's singing and there's a performance. Sometimes I worked with some of the guys from that time, and they'll play the instruments like a drummer played all the way through, and I listen back to it and it sounds perfect. And he says, no, I'm going to do it again. This time I'm a performer.
Right. Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
another level.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think this is the reason why we love going to concerts, isn't it? Because at a concert, they have to sing it all the way through,
Yes.
right? It is a performance that, they're not just going to compartmentalize it and come back and sing the next bit. It is an experience where you are all on the same frequency at the same time, which is that beautiful energy of elevation because you're all in the groove. Because it's
Right.
happening in that real time. And this is why, concert players, any of the big performers can charge the money because it is, for some people, once in a lifetime experience that they will
Yes.
never forget, that they will always refer to. And I think, it's like, Joe Coleman was saying that when disco came in and nobody played the bands anymore, they had just played records and DJ, that there was an art lost and a connection lost. And disco was great. I'm from the disco era. I used to be a DJ, so yeah, all great. But the reason why it petered out was because people were hungry for the live performers. They were hungry to be in the presence of,
Yes.
and there is nothing to replace that. Nothing at all.
No, there isn't. They tried. I have programs on my computer, and you hit this button, and it's called humanize. They try the computer's going to humanize it for you, and
How about
because
having a
that's
human in there?
so first you program it, and then you humanize it. And that's a big thing now, to make it sound natural. So and I have another producer friend in LA said the young people are kind of discovering like real strings, and it's amazing to them when they put it on their music. Wow.
Yes.
That was standard back in the day,
Yeah.
but real strings, real organic instruments, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And people want to feel that. It speaks to the soul differently.
It
in a
does.
pro.
It does. It does. It totally, yeah, it's a different frequency. But you know, for the young people that are coming up right now, who are you watching? Who do you think is going to be that next big one?
I watch different ones. I was recently I'm kind of fascinated with young people who kind of are focused on perpetuating some of the older music, like October London is one who's singing, who came with the Marvin Gaye. And I was kind of fascinated by listening how he was presenting that. And speaking of that kind of singing, somebody like I've watched over years, like Bruno Mars, right? Because I used to tell people, so sometimes young people will say, yeah, I need to have this beat and I need to use this drum machine. I said, no, look at the success of somebody like Bruno Mars. Look at he was writing songs. Like songs, like real songs when he first came out. And if you compared to what was on the radio and the drum, it wasn't that.
You're right.
Even now, where he takes 90s sound and flips it, and look at the success of that. Look at the success of people who do that and stay in a different lane, but using all the elements, the young elements and stuff. So he's somebody who I've looked to over time to see how he flips the script and stays in a different lane, but still contemporary and hugely successful. And I do I listen to music, like I listen to Taylor Swift, because I'm listening to what are they doing? And she comes from a background where she can play and sing. And it's like, hello, I can pick up a guitar and do the thing, sing it and write it and stuff. This is the foundation of everything you're seeing. So if the power goes off and the lights go out, she can still hit it. And no matter what you think about that music, that's a big thing these days to be able to hit it.
And that's the reason why they can charge the big bucks. There was a show, I've forgotten the name of it. But what was really interesting about it actually was music writers, performers that wrote the music. They were the mentors, and people would come in and kind of pitch their song, and then a mentor would choose them and then work with them to refine it. And then, of course, there'd always be a winner each week. But it was so fascinating to be able to see the workings behind it. Now, you've got a real great hit there. But, taking the people that have been in the business and their expertise, how about we do this? How about change the beat there? How about that? And then working with them to refine their song. And then at the end of it, watching the beginning, the raw part of it to what it became. Right, through this expertise. Unfortunately, that show isn't on anymore, and I wish that it was,
Yeah, I
because
remember
it was
that.
just really something that really showed you the workings behind it. And I think for anybody wanting to get into music and want to write their songs and want to produce their songs, it was invaluable to watch the processes and the way that some people have been in the business. You're missing something, or how about higher octane, or this or that, and it just immediately transformed everything. So, and we need more of that type of thing out there, because there's a lot of people that are on TikTok or on YouTube or whatever, and they're playing to some synthesized music in the background, and it may sound great in the next sensation, but as you said, when they get out there and they have to start working with real musicians, get into the studio, start doing all the other stuff, then it can become very, very intimidating for them. Right.
Yes, it's interesting that you were focused on what that process was with the songwriting thing. And sometimes I tell people that process can be very tedious and challenging to make something from zero to hero. And I mentioned Bruno Mars, so I appreciate the clip he has out where he's trying to come up with the drum part, him and his producer. To one of his hit songs he has out, and he shows it. I love those clips like that. And he said, I spent hours and hours and hours, and it sounds like a simple beat, right? When you hear it, but hours and hours getting the right sound, the right groove, the right feel. And I appreciate that kind of thing, because I tell people sometimes when I select as a keyboardist and I have a song and I'm gonna select which piano sound or which keyboard sound, I might audition 500 to 600 of them before I find the right one that fits for that particular song. Now, if you're into the quick music, you can get lucky or fortunate and just put whatever you want in there and deal with the quantity and be putting out a lot of songs. But you never have that experience where you're really taking time to make sure all the pieces fit in. I can hear whether it's the tracks for Bruno or Beyonce, I can hear that they took the time to make sure that stuff fit together. And that's not, I don't see a lot of that online, but it's the reality of how much time you have to spend to have a major hit or to just to do well. A song, even with songwriting, lyric part, every part of the process has to be focused. You have to focus on that and spend a lot of time on it. And I hear people bragging, I can write 10 songs in one day. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I can do that
The
too.
quality, you know,
But
let's always understand quality is always over quantity, right? And
yes.
you know, as you said, all the musicians of the past, they would write a song, they'll get into the studio, they'll play around with the music and what needs to be added, and you know, they've worked that number before they produce that number. Just like anybody in the theater business, they go and play at different theaters before getting out onto Broadway because they're ironing out the different details or things that need to be changed. And for a musician to get up there on the stage and then produce, present rather their performance, there's already been a hell of a lot of rewriting, read this and read that in order to get it right. You know, like Ed Sheeran. I mean, he's a consummate writer and he makes it look so easy, but you know, what about the workings behind it all?
Oh yeah, and we it's kind of reversed now to where you go in the studio, if you're young, you do a hit, then you got to learn how to present it on stage, right?
Yes.
Back, I did a session with who's passed, Al Smith, the famous engineer at Capitol Records, and I'm and lot in my journey, the one of the best parts is sitting next to people like that. But he had 33 Grammys, right? And just listen, because they'll talk and tell you stories, the
Yes.
definite story of what it was like and who they recorded. And he was talking about Frank Sinatra at the time. We was recording, working on maybe a piano solo of Nat King Cole. I was doing a remake of one of the songs. And so he was talking about Frank Sinatra and his process. And back then, with the Rat Pack and at that time, they would learn and present their songs on the road. Like, this is a new song. They would play. So by the time they came to the studio, they were experts at that particular song. And she said, yeah, Frank would come in, whether it's Fly Me to the Moon, whatever. And so he was the engineer, come in, go into the studio, say, roll it, and sing it once, and be that's it. But that comes from the, I said, that was it. Yeah, he said, sing the song one time, and then
They've
that's the
already
record.
refined it.
That's the record. And you see pictures of Capitol where they have music in front of them, which some of the vocals, I think it was Dean Martin, they had music, Sammy Davis. They were musicians. They can look at a sheet and see all the string part of the music, and it helped them sing, actually. And but they had developed that over time on the road. And it's kind of reversed today, which is a must be a challenge. Like, you get the song and you have a hit song. Now you have to learn how to present it
Well,
on
you've got a
stage.
lot of kids that, you know, that are street busking, playing out there for the coins and playing it out, but it is that form of kind of playing it over and over again and refining it, right? And getting the feedback to seeing what the audience or how many people are listening. But it's just, again, in order to make something that feels just right, that's just reached that perfect pitch, you've got to be willing to go through the process. There is no quick, you know, not if you want the depth, not if you want the longevity, right?
No,
You've got to be willing to go through the process.
I'll say this, I'll put this out there. So I told you I have piano songs, instrumentals, and I'm playing solos on like some of them. Even though my main thing is I write lyrics and pop songs and that whole thing, but I come up under with the jazz, right? So I'm playing piano about five or six songs that I'm going to release this year. And each piano in these studios have different characters in the way they sound and feel. And so this is something I just learned over the last couple of years, to where I'll play the piano on a particular song at a studio, and it's not cheap to do this at these studios. And it's a piano, so every mistake you make, you can't really fix stuff. You need to play it right. And so there's a lot of pressure on myself, to play it. And they're new songs, so I have not been able to take them on the road and play them in front of people. So I'm at a different comfortable level. I'm not as comfortable as I want to be with them. And most of the songs, three or four songs, I've played them over four or five times. Now, when you hear them, this sounds simple. And I took a point to where one time the assistant engineer said, "Why is he playing that song over again? It sounds great." And it's because I'm trying to emote a certain way. And I can hear it. I can hear it, and I know it's going to reach people different if I could just hit the piano a certain way and emote. It's serious business.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? You want it to represent the way you're hearing it in your head, right? And you want to match
Yes.
that, because if it doesn't, then it's like, no, I'm not quite there. I'm not quite there. And when, like, the voice or the sound in your head matches actually what you're doing, then you go, ah, okay, I've
Yeah,
got
that's
it.
it.
Yeah, I've got it. I can stop now.
It's not easy.
No.
It takes a lot of work.
Right.
It's not easy.
I mean, sometimes I can just press the button. I do this for my own shows. I don't even know what I'm going to talk about. Whatever comes out, or I've got one word or one, phrase that I want to cover, and organically it comes out. But if I'm doing any form of presentation for anything, and it's got to be particular, it's a record no, record no, record no. Okay, that one's okay. And you've got to
Yeah,
be willing to
exactly.
do that. It's patience, persistence, resilience, and gut feeling of when it's right.
Yeah, when it's right, yeah. And I can hear it. I got good ears. I can hear it when it's laying there right. And even though other people say, that's fine, I say, yeah, you're right, it's good. But I have another level that I'm trying to
Yes.
present.
Yeah. It
And
needs a little
it's been a
icing on
process.
top.
It's good. Like I said, it's good when I do present it and somebody out of the audience hears that. Oh, but they're saying that I can hear you put time in. They don't know how much time I put in it,
Right.
but you fine-tuned that. Yeah, it
Yes.
took a while.
Yeah.
It took a while.
Well, because it's again, there's that in syncness, isn't it? The syncness between how you hear it in your head, the instruments put together, and how they need to come up a bit or back a bit or be fully here or less there. And, even if the way you're singing it, no, I need to go that way with it. And it's like synchronizing everything into the right tune, so that, yeah, now this is harmonious. It all works together.
Yeah, exactly. And I also tell people, since we're on a computer now, we can edit
Yes.
differently than old school. And so I can edit even if it's an iconic singer, I can get maybe I'll take a verse from this place and this other chorus had the magic on it, and this verse had and put them together, and it's like incredible strength to be able to present that like that, to where I can take somebody who, like even with Ronnie, even though he played the solo perfect the first time, but had he had wanted to take a couple takes, I can take half of this and half of that.
Yeah.
They didn't do it in the past. It's still all organic, but it's incredible how strong things become, the song
Right,
becomes, because you have
exactly.
that power.
But I mean, again, as a producer, you've got to know how all that machinery works, right? I do all my editing here, and I'll be absolutely honest, there's certain program I'm extremely limited on. It's not
Yes.
my strength to actually understand how to do this and do that. And if I do try it, I end up screwing it up. So,
No.
it's knowing that I can extract from here and put that over there, and then put this over there, and then it just, like, you're creating by being able to put all those pieces together to
Yeah.
make a whole.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. I've done sessions as a producer where maybe the soloist wasn't strong, that strong, but I have them do like six takes, and then they hear it back and say, "Wow, was that me?"
Yeah,
I said,
exactly.
"Well, you got to have those skills too to be
Yes.
able to, especially these days. These days, you got to have the skill, the editing skills."
Yes. And I think anybody coming into this line of business, yes, it's wonderful. You've got your TikTok and your Instagram and your this and that. That's a really fantastic marketing platform. Do not think that is just your stage, because when you actually get up on a real stage with real musicians, and really doing that performance, is a totally different ball game altogether. And you've really got to know your stuff. So if you've got a song out there, yeah, all right, maybe TikTok and everything else, you've got 1 million followers, big deal. How about you pick up your guitar or pick up whatever else you get out there in the street and start doing some street bass thing and start singing, and really kind of get, pay those dues, because the lessons you're going to learn from that are going to be invaluable.
Yes, give you longevity too.
Yeah.
That's the foundation, really, being able to do that, what you just said. Pick up your instrument, play in front of people, and there's a element of entertainment. You got to entertain. You don't have to jump up and down and a
Yes.
lot, but just let the music be strong, and that'll give you a career if you do that correctly.
Yeah. And let's face it, not all singers are musicians. Now, they may be able to hear the music, and although they're not players of instruments, but you've still got to know the musician's instruments to know where you need the strength, where you need to pull back. You've got to be able to articulate to them. Because you're in it together, so you've got to be able to speak some form of music language.
Yes. Like you said, understanding what's
Yes.
going on behind you.
Yes.
Yeah, so you can say something when you need to. You don't have to be an expert on any of the instruments, but understanding how things work,
Whenever I do see a
invaluable.
performer on The Voice, especially because of the band behind them, and they are performers, but maybe they're instrumentalists, but they haven't got their instrument with them, they always turn around and nod a thank you to the band because they understand. They understand. Right, I
They
only
appreciate it.
sound good because you guys laid down that track that made me stand out, right? And so that you can always tell who are the musicians because they turn around and acknowledge, the rest of the band. So yeah. And
They understand, huh? They
they
understand what's
understand. They understand. And I
happening.
said at times that the performance is absolutely fantastic because you could see the band and the performer have a connection. And
Yes.
then you can see that connection and it just changes the performance altogether,
Oh
which is fantastic.
exactly.
But I mean that you may have a lead singer, and that lead singer, it's got like Taylor Swift, Beyonce, and all of that. They've got a huge responsibility of being the forefront person. It's a lot to carry, right? And but if they don't have the respect or the trust from the people around them, musicians, the wardrobe, and everything else that's going on, if they don't have that respect, believe me, it will start crumbling. So they recognize just as much their only sound as good and they're only as big as they are because of the team behind them. You are never more important than the team because without the team, you ain't much important.
They get that. I've had iconic artists. Donny Osmond used to make that statement. He would come. We had like two different tour buses, right? He had his own, and so he liked to ride with the band because he likes to, hang out with the band. And he gave a speech to us, and he was just thankful. And it was that speech where you guys, as a musician, you guys can play with anybody. So I'm thankful that you're here, laying the foundation for me to do my thing. And this was early on when I first started touring with them. I thought it was kind of interesting. It's like, no, I'm thankful that I'm here. He's thanking me. I thank you for having me here.
I got
But
a consistent paying gig.
it
Thank
was a
you.
big tour. It was a big situation. But I always remember that. He's thanking us for choosing him.
The other thing
And
is, the other side of it is that, when you are a musician and you are on the road, or you are playing anyway, it's very hard to have a family life. It's very hard to have the picket fence type thing because, and you've really got to choose your partner very, very strong that can deal with being on their own, that aren't needy, and that that communication you have at the Zoom calls at night or whatever, that you have a strong relationship. Same with your children. It is about the quality, not always the quantity, but making sure. And not everybody is equipped to doing that. That they just can't have the two because they fall to pieces because one goes by the wayside.
Right. And I've seen like in cases of like what I just said with Donnie, where it's a lifestyle. And so like he would fly, you see the wife pop up for a while and just support there. Then the little kid be in the bus for a while, you got to kind of incorporate that in there if that so your foundation is right, because it's to protect yourself from a lot of the crazy things that are going on the road and out there, so you can have longevity again.
And also kind of, it is a stressful job too, especially if you are on the road because it's, night after night in different places. You've got the travel in between. It can be exhausting. And there is also the other temptation of substance along the way. And that is something else that musicians, I mean, back in the day, it was kind of a norm. I don't know. You can tell me whether that is such a norm nowadays where more people go, no, I don't want to go down that road.
No, I tell people and they're surprised. So, like you said, it was a norm. When I hear the stories, like I still tour with the Pointer Sisters, and a lot of them have stories of what was going on in the 80s, right? In the 80s and the 90s. And it's kind of shocking. They'll tell you what was happening in the studios, on the road, on the planes, and everything. And you don't see, like when I came up, very, you don't see it. It's not that. It's not that. Somebody might be doing something, but it's not like on the road, for instance, like the group with Shaka or something, you just don't see. It's not that anymore.
You're right. Yeah, I think it was kind of, especially kind of like 70s, 80s, early 90s, kind of
Yes.
It was the norm thing to do, and especially back in the late 60s, 70s, it was that time, right? Where
Yes.
drugs are really big. And of course, some of the greatest music we got was through LSD, because it really set people free. But again, at the same time, it killed them. So, it is, it's how, and it's very easy, I would imagine, for de-stressing, and picking up a drink or picking up something else. And it's like you really do need to know how to manage yourself. That you come off the stage, you've had a great high, it's been a wonderful position. Now you're packing up on the bus to go to the next one, or even like coming back the next night. How do you decompress? And you want to maintain that kind of high, but that doesn't mean going to a substance and getting a different high.
Yeah, I as an observer of super famous people on stage when I'm watching them, I watch their schedules and I'm like, I get tired just looking at what they're doing.
Yes.
And they're older. They're
Yes.
older. I like whether it's Dionne Warwick, I'm looking at what they have to do when they come to town with the radio, the promotions, the stress, the money, and buying before we go out, and how much money they spend on getting the set together.
Yeah.
And just I'm just hearing it and watching it, getting the steps together, the music, dealing with the band and their whole teams, and things going left and right, especially in the 60s and 70s, where like when I talk to the Pointer Sisters, they're dealing with racial elements
Oh,
and
yeah.
when they're traveling. And so I understand why they would reach out for some substance.
Yes.
People, I
Yeah.
understand what was going on there,
Yeah.
and just to try to get through, which is bad, like because as you get older, that can affect you in a bad way if you don't really flip that back to something more healthy and natural.
Exactly. You ain't gonna have a different form of
Yeah,
longevity.
healthy
And
and
we
natural,
look
but.
at Rod Stewart and the Rolling Stones, like they're still out there doing performances, right? And
Amazing,
it's
huh?
and they've got still got a great following and still got it together. And yeah, they definitely went down the substance route back then, but they learned at some point, hey, we're not gonna be around tomorrow. They saw friends, in the industry fall by the
Yes.
wayside, and it became that wake-up call. But I think the other thing too is that obviously there's the making the living, but it's also allowing yourself downtime, making sure you do manage your finances so that when you do are in between gigs, this is your time of your downtime and about you or your family, and making sure you do manage yourself and that kind of time along the way. It's just as important, isn't it?
Yes, it's important. I call it a balance.
Yeah.
And so the last 5 years I focus on that, and that's dietary too.
Yes,
So
it
there's a
is.
balance, because when you're on the road, it can get interesting what you eat.
Right.
And basically you're grabbing whatever's around you,
Yeah.
and you can control that better at home. And so, but you these days, since you've got your Uber Eats and all that, you can order stuff from grocery stores. That's different.
Yes.
You're not stuck as it used to be.
Right.
And then as far as my environment, I have to have a calm environment which I can create in. So
Yeah.
there can't be chaos and confusion, and
Yeah.
with family members, it can't be anywhere like that. So I have to help create, distance myself sometimes from things so I can have peace and quiet, because none of this music would come out of chaos for
No,
me.
too much static going on,
Ecstatic,
right? Yeah.
And so it takes a while. Sometimes on the tour, some of the other band members, are they over time, they would say, yeah, Kevin's always disappearing. Like,
Yes.
and I used to disappear a lot because I was working on this, what people see now
Yeah.
over the years.
I remember being in Rome, 1976. Yes, I'm that old. And a friend took me to this club, and it was kind of almost like a knock on the door. Joe sent me, right, and went into this place, and it was beginning to fill up. And I said, "What's going on here?" And he said, "Just wait, just wait." And then one by one, it was late at night, one by one, various musicians from various gigs would come in, and they would pick up an instrument in this big circle and just start playing. And nobody was playing anything in particular, right? And then others would come in and pick up, and then they'd kind of tune in with each other, and they would just jam together. And it was just absolutely a most beautiful experience to watch, because they're just literally playing, tuned into each other, creating something in the moment that will never be repeated. It was their way to decompress, not play what was expected of them out there, now just playing for the love of playing, but being, you know, picking up off each other and just coming together. And it was just so incredible,
I've
absolutely
taken
incredible.
that reminds me of a form of decompression that we
Yes.
have. It's kind of interesting is that people when they drive and they listen to music and we don't want to hear anything in the car.
Yeah.
Silence.
Yeah.
Because we're listening, people understand we're hearing music over and over again,
Yes.
all day, all night, and stuff.
It's.
So a lot of time decompression involved not hearing anything, the silence. I had a experience on the road. I think I was playing with Jeffrey Osborne, singer, Jeffrey Osborne. And the band got into the van. We're going back to the hotel, and the driver put on the radio. And then somebody in the van, one of us said, "Can you turn that music off?" And the funny thing, he said, "We hate music, you know." We all kind of laugh. We all hate music. And so he turned it off, right? And it says, "We don't want to hear, and we just got off stage, right?
Right,
We just
exactly.
playing music 24/7." And I find I do that a lot. I make trips from Los Angeles to San Diego quite often, and just I won't listen to anything. And then if I do listen to it, it's something that I've done, so I'm reviewing
Exactly. I'm
it.
like that. I travel between here and my daughter. It's about 1 hour and 40 away each way, and I don't have anything on. This is,
Oh, you too?
yep. No, I love the silence. I hear so much in the silence. Right? You
Yeah,
can literally hear
that's
yourself
interesting.
think. You can hear yourself feel. You can hear those messages that are trying to download, because there isn't any of that chatter. So I'll even find myself after a show, the headphones are still on. I'm listening to nothing and just going about what I need to do until I realize, oh, I can
Okay,
take
you
the headphones
understand.
off now. Yeah.
You understand. Even
I
the trip,
understand.
even that
Silence
long
is
trip,
golden.
yeah. Even that long trip from I guess it's a 10-hour journey, New York to
Yeah.
overseas. Take it's a good time to catch up on stuff, listen to me. It's the same thing. I scared sometimes I'll turn on something, but it'll be my own stuff so I can hear where I'm at with
Yeah.
the production of it. But very most of the time it's just silence. I have those noise reductions.
Yes.
It's silence. I'm just kind of sitting there. And it's the best thing ever.
Yes. It really is a time that you're giving yourself, your psyche, your soul, your spirit, your heart. It's a time for it to kind of calm down, be present, and then from that, like, there's so many things that kind of come to the mind, that isn't just chatter and chaos around you. It's that kind of comfort, and wherever you do arrive, yes, your body's been driving for X amount of time, but you're calm, right? And
Yes.
that's the beauty of it. You're calm, you're collected, you're present for whatever is coming next.
Yes. Oh yeah, now I understand better what I'm doing. I look around me, everybody's watching movies and listening to stuff, and I'm just sitting there and and enjoying it.
Yes. Silence is golden. You know that, this, especially if you're in a business where it is noise, you do need that switch off completely and to be in that silence, because otherwise, it gets too static. It gets too much overload. You need to let yourself come back to center, and that comes back through the
That
silence. Yeah.
helps. Yeah, that helps. I do this thing too in travel, because I think I'm on my fourth or fifth passport book at this point. And so when I go into a country where it's Scotland or wherever, one of the first things I do is I drop my bags off at the hotel and I go for the walk.
Yeah.
And I'm walking in a different culture, which is very interesting. Japan, Tokyo, this, and just walking. Of course, I stick out wherever I'm at, Scotland. So I'm watching people if they're watching, but that walk for a few minutes at the beginning is very decompressing before I get into whatever I'm there for. And usually with the artists that have been around, they don't do like the young people tour, and they got a date every day. They're
Yeah.
moving and they're grooving. Not the other. They'll have a date, and then maybe 2 days later, 3 days later, we'll do another date somewhere. So like we're in Australia or somewhere, we have like a couple of days before we
Yes.
have to play again. So they're more walking and it's more decompression. I'm in a different country, so I'm
And more
not getting
exploring.
phone calls. Yes,
Yes.
I'm just
Yeah.
walking around and just that's it's been a fun thing to do.
Yeah. And kind of even walking around, there's different beats of life going on in different places. And that beat of life there will always find its way back into the music somehow.
Oh yes, definitely, definitely, yes.
And you wouldn't be able to hear it if you weren't present with it.
Yeah, that's right. I got to get out in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, your album is going to be coming out when?
So you're talking about the full length one? Because I'm
Yeah.
working on singles now. I just
Right.
released a single before the end of the year. I got one more that might, within a couple of weeks, might pop up again. And then it'll be the assembly of the full length record. And I project this quarter, before this quarter is over. So before the end of March, it'll be a whole full length record.
So talk about the numbers that you have right now.
Numbers I have, of course, a year ago I released Tell Me If You Still Care, which features Phil Perry and Shannon Pearson's on it, and it's been doing extremely well. I did a full video on it. I had a director, and it was a whole thing we did, and it's been doing very well on YouTube. It's getting ready to hit 3 million views, you know. And like I said, what I enjoy is the comments where people are saying how it's affecting them. And so there was that. And my interest eventually, after I do this record, I'll go back into my love, which is more pop oriented. So I have a pop slash R&B tune that I released at the beginning of the year, You're All I Need. And it just won. There's an organization called the World Entertainment Awards. So it was nominated for Best R&B.
Oh, great.
And I'm getting ready. And they asked me to perform at the show. And it's all during the Grammy season that week. And so
Great.
it'd be the whole red carpet, and then I perform it, and the whole bit.
Nice.
That particular song got nominated,
Wonderful.
and so that's the second one. Then the one I just released, the thing with Ronnie Laws called Smooth It Over, and so that's new. So that just got out there,
And what's that
but that's
called?
something. Smooth It Over is the name
Smooth
of
it
that tune, that
over.
single. Yeah, Smooth It Over. When you do instrumental tunes, you got to come up with all kind of titles. And so that was one, and the one that I'm working on now that's getting ready to come out is called Put It There, and it's just me on piano. It's a groove tune, groove jazz, you know, smooth music.
Nice.
And then after that, I'm going to assemble, you know, the rest of the songs. So probably a quarter of the songs that I got out is going to be vocalists. The vocalist that sang on Tell Me If You Still Care, Shannon Pearson, the female vocalist, I remade a song, At Last. But it has kind of an R&B and some reggae elements to it, so it's going to be interesting. But so I'm going to release that on the full length record that's coming up, so that's going to be exciting. We've been performing that live for a while, and she
Nice.
used to sing background. She was with Natalie Cole, so that was her gig for years. And when you hear her voice, you understand, because it's very Natalie Cole synced sonically. So she has that special quality. So I'm looking forward to releasing that, and then, I'm trying to get Jeffrey Osborne to sing one with me. Actually, I might see him tomorrow. And these are songs that I've written. They're kind of like pop R&B. And then I'm going to assemble them all this quarter, and put it out there to see what people think.
Which song are we going to close out with today?
Yes. So I did mention that Smooth It Over, which is the jazz thing. But the big one, I think are we playing Tell Me If You Still Care? Is the big release with Phil Perry, featuring Phil Perry and Shannon Pearson. Tell Me If You Still Care.
Okay. Now, what is your site's name and how do people get hold of you and how do they follow you?
Yeah, so website is just my name,
Can you
kevinflournoy.com.
spell that for the people that are just listening, please, love?
Kevin Flournoy, it's Kevin, and then Flournoy, kevinflournoy.com. And then, you know, a lot of information's on there about my other sites, which is the I'm at kevin.flow for Instagram. And I have a TikTok. You just pull up my name, it'll pop up. You'll see me everywhere. And then I do a lot of posting still on Facebook, because I developed my following there too early on. And so that's just my name, Kevin Flournoy, and the number one, where you can find on the Facebook.
And just, follow and leave comments. Of course, you're on YouTube as well.
YouTube, and that's under my name also, just Kevin Flournoy. Yeah,
Right.
and you pull up YouTube and you subscribe to my channel, and you'll get all these videos behind the scenes. And I have a new behind the scenes video of the making of Tell Me If You Still Care, which is, you need to go see that, because the process behind the scenes, you would think we were having a major party. He said, "Did you guys shoot a video?" Yeah, that was part of it, because the band was Between the takes, we were playing songs, people were dancing and singing, we were doing Temptations, we're doing all kind of crazy stuff between the songs, everything from Car Wash to, and we're
Yes.
dancing, singing, Phil Perry singing, and then they would say, okay, now go back to the song, and we would do the video. And then between the takes is all kind of shenanigans going on, so it's very interesting. So I just put that up on oh, actually I'm getting ready to put it up on YouTube next week. It's on Facebook, but I'll make an announcement and put that up there. It's
Excellent,
exciting
wonderful.
to see.
So we're going to close out with your song today, and I invite people to go to your site and to really look at the music, look at the YouTube, look at everything, follow it. If you're a young musician and you really want to get into this trade, you really do need to see his process and listen to him, because it isn't all about a catchy little tune and you just put it out there. There is so much that you need to know, and there's so much that you need to earn in order to get there. And yeah, you may be a big hit wonder and you've broken through, like many of the young artists today that are discovered. But if you haven't got all the skills, and if you don't listen, and if you don't pay attention to those that have been there before you, you will not be around very long. So please do listen, do learn, do apply, but most certainly find your groove and share it, because we all need the music, right?
That's right. Thanks for having me. Yeah,
Ma,
I try
thank you.
to.
Thank you so much for sharing. We're going to close out with your number now. Get into the groove, folks. Don't forget to follow and to like and everything on his YouTube and all of his others, Instagram and Facebook. And let the music show you the way. Until next time, bye for now.
Where you been? How come I haven't talked to you? What's up?
We hope that you enjoyed the show. There are so many more for you here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. Just go to the podcast tag at the top there and you will see all the many genres and all 3,000 shows ready for your listening. We are here to serve you, to help you on your journey of life, and we know that through inspiration, it begets invitation. We are supported by you, the listeners, and those that we interview. Anything that you can spare us in donation would be greatly accepted, and we do hope that you enjoy the next show.